Have you done this before?
No, but I've seen it on TV.
100% pure adrenaline. Other guys snort for it, jab a vein for it, and all you got to do is jump.
Yours, mine, theirs.
Hi, I'm Johnny from Utah, and yours, mine, and theirs listeners, this is your wake-up call. I am not an FBI agent.
Je m'appelle Roy, mais dans quelques minutes, je serai en fait un zombie sexy de Swayze.
Hi, I'm Josh. Stupid sexy Bodhi, stop haunting my dreams.
Nice, thank you. Welcome back, Josh. And that is Roy, the person talking in French, if no one caught his name, because I didn't. I'll have to ask you about that translation later. I did hear, I heard sexy Swayze. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Sexy zombie Swayze.
Good stuff. This is Yours, Mine, and Theirs. It's the fourth greatest internet podcast ever. It's a movie podcast. It's a podcast about democracy and how it always fails. The combination of those things has led us to talk about female directors and some specific three movies. Those three movies are Penny Marshall's Big, Catherine Bigelow's Point Break, and Matty Diop's Atlantique, or Atlantics, depending on, I guess, what DVD cover you have, or or whatever. So, anyway, this is, I feel kind of bad because I thought it would be kind of fun to do a female director's one, but we can only pick three, and apparently there are just a ton of movies, and it's like one of the broadest topics we've ever done. And I actually feel kind of bad that it's like, okay, well, I guess these three movies represent every female directed movie ever made. But you know, that's kind of what we're stuck with. That's the limitations of our process. So I thought it would be a great way to, you know, to be inclusive, but sorry, women, we only gave you three.
So if you feel strongly about this category and you think we shortchanged it, then 1 year from now, you could try to make us bring it back.
Yeah.
Part of the fun.
We could totally resurrect that. Now joining us this time, Josh, this is your community service. You were with us last week, two weeks ago as we do this bi-weekly or semi-weekly.
Yes.
Bi-weekly. Okay. So you're back after choosing your new movies. Now, did it pan out the way you wanted to? Would you have rather, are you kind of like, I can't believe I landed on this category, or how satisfied are you? And also,
I loaded
that up because you can't say you're not satisfied.
No, I actually liked the selections. This was a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty interesting. It turns out women contain multitudes, right? Because this is probably just three of the most different movies we've ever done, which is always fun. I always like it when they're way different. So
agreed.
Yeah. Boy. Okay. Well, anyway, any news that we need to talk about before we get into them?
So briefly, I guess, if you want to let me touch upon this, we just recorded this.
Yeah.
The decision. So, you know, that we're doing Yours, Mine, and Theirs live in Salt Lake City on July 1st. We know what three movies we'll be watching, but you will have to wait for that podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So stay tuned. If you're subscribed to the podcast, this will just be right on the feed. You'll hear the chaos of choosing our live shows that our live movies that we're going to be watching together. July 1st, everybody mark your calendars, July 1st at the Post Theater. We're having a Yours, Mine, and Theirs event. And it's free. So just tell us. It's free unless there's high demand.
It's free for you guys.
If there's high demand, we might, you know, we'll see how that goes.
So if we start charging people, is that when we get in trouble?
Oh, it probably is.
Maybe we'll sell the nibs at an extra high cost.
Yeah, we'll have to sell. I don't know. We could probably. I might have to like get some Bitcoin. Like it's whoever gives me the most Bitcoin, you know. So we can kind of, we can. That's plausible deniability as far as bribery goes. But okay, so that's happening. Everybody, write that down. July 1st. We're doing the Post Theater, and it's detective movies, but we're not going to tell you what they are now.
Yeah.
You'll know in a couple of days.
So
it's
going to
be awesome.
If there's been anything recently, and speaking of detective movies, I've probably watched about 30 hours of Columbo, to the point where John texted me and scolded me for not watching female director movies.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it was probably your mistake for just texting me during all your Columbo episodes.
Yeah, I kept bothering you because, like, every single episode was like Myrna Loy, and then there was a Laurence Olivier, and then there was Dean Yeager. And I mean, like, the guest stars on Columbo is just insane. It's crazy who they get for that show. But anyway,
I think there's medication you can take for that.
Yeah.
30 hours of Columbo.
Oh, and each Columbo episode's like an hour and a half long. It's a long show, but I love Columbo. So anyway, he's a detective.
So he is. Okay.
Never made a movie.
I'll watch one of those. We'll get to that.
Ooh, the Johnny Cash episode. That's a good one.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm writing this down for sure. I'm writing this down so that, yeah, I'll be able to, so I'll know how to communicate with you in the future, Johnny Cash, Columbo. Okay. all right. Well, again, the three movies are Big, Point Break, and Atlantique. Right? Mm-hmm. Big is the Facebook poll winner. So this is the Democratic masses. Big, directed by Penny Marshall, of course, of Laverne and Shirley fame. And it's one of those, it's like, oh, okay, Penny Marshall directed this. You know, sometimes you don't realize that. Kind of interesting that a woman directed a movie based on a young man. We'll see if that plays out. We'll see if there's any insight. Do we see any girly influences or whatever? Maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we should just look at the movie.
Well, it'd be interesting to talk about Point Break because that's a woman directing a film with only one female actor in the entire movie. Right.
Yeah.
This is the most testosterone-y film ever. So, yes. You know, people go crazy over the volleyball scene in Top Gun. This entire movie is the volleyball scene in Top Gun.
Well, yeah.
But for like 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to Point Break for sure. And I have a lot to say about the testosterone in Point Break. Like, how is that even possible, considering? But, okay, but Big is first.
So sexy.
Roy, it's your job to talk about Big, so lead us through Big and tell us what Big is about if anybody has never seen it.
Sure. It's been a long time since I'd seen it, by the way. So Big, quickly, I think I'm going to do this as quickly as I can. So you have Josh Baskins. He's a 12-year-old teenager. Best friend is Billy. They kind of live in a small town, sort of near New York City. So I'm guessing we're talking New Jersey. Anyway, he likes a girl, and he meets her with his family at a carnival, and she wants to go on a roller coaster with him, and he's like, yeah. And he turns out to be too short. Josh, when you're 12 and all the girls are taller than you, that's the way it is, but it doesn't last very long. They've all stopped growing at that point. So he's humiliated, and she ends up going on the roller coaster with her friend who can drive. So he finds Zoltar, and he makes a wish, and he just wants to be bigger. Or big. Does he say, I want to be big? I don't know. He probably says the name of the movie. And then the screwy part is that the Zoltar carnival machine, it's not even plugged in, John. Anyway, he goes home, and he wakes up, and when he wakes up, he's Tom Hanks. And so Tom Hanks rapidly gets dressed in some of his – we get to see some serious underwear in Tom Hanks, so that's nice. But he tries to go and find the Zoltar machine. It's gone because those ex-cons, they tore down that carnival real fast. They're out of town. Yeah, the carnies, man. They didn't even leave a single bucket of caramel behind. So he goes home and he tries to tell his mom what happened. His mom doesn't believe it, and so he has to escape. He goes to his best friend Billy, and he's able to convince Billy because they have this crazy little like saying thing that they say to each other. And so Billy knows it's him, and they make the decision that any child who doesn't can't go home and has no idea what's going on with himself would make, and that is to immediately move to Manhattan. So they hop on a bus and go to New York City. He stays in a really awful hotel. He needs to get a job. I think they figure out pretty quickly that the Zoltar machine, they can figure out where it is, but it takes a month to get the paperwork from whatever bureau is responsible for knowing where arcade machines are.
That was the most unbelievable thing about the entire movie for me, anyway, Because I am a full-on adult man, and I would have no idea what kind of government agency I'd have to visit to, like, figure out, like, the stats they have on where specific machines in the city are located.
It's the Kearney Bureau, I think.
Yeah.
So, anyway, during that month, he has to be able to pay for his really scary hotel room, and he knows computers, so he gets, like, a data entry job at Macmillan Toys? Is it Macmillan Toys?
Yeah, I think that's it.
So, but he gets his first paycheck, and while he's spending his paycheck, he goes to FAO Schwartz, and that's where he meets the CEO of Macmillan Toys, and he's really impressed with the insight that Josh has into thoughts about toys. He bumps him up to vice president of something, but his job basically is to play with toys, their prototyping, and give his thoughts on them. He immediately becomes a villain of Paul. Paul wants kids to play with awful, crappy toys like the Empire State Building robot, which is like the worst Transformer ever made.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Paul, who's the girl? His name, why do I want to say Susan? That's not it.
It's Susan.
Oh, Susan. Isn't okay. It? So he catches the eye of Susan and they start to kind of form a relationship and whatever. And it's hijinks ensue because he's still just a kid. Mentally and emotionally. Eventually, Johnny stops being a kid, and he goes dancing. Dancing leads to romancing. Romancing leads to groping. And as soon as that happens, he's not the kid he was anymore. And Billy calls him out and says, you're Josh Baskins. You're 13 years old. You need to come home. Snaps back to reality. He tries to tell Susan he's a 13-year-old boy, and she doesn't really buy it, but she does come around, and they meet up at a new Kearney location where he does the Zoltar. She drives him home, and off screen he transmorphs back into Josh and sees his mom, and his mom's happy.
They didn't have the CGI budget for an on-screen kid transformation.
Yeah.
So it would have looked a little bit like a reverse film footage of when Spock suddenly grew to an adult Spock in Star Trek 3.
I do want to say, I've always thought of this as Tom Hanks's breakout film. Now, he had already done Splash.
Yeah.
But I still kind of think of this as like his major Hollywood is paying attention now movie.
I think he was nominated for an Oscar for this movie.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
So, and it's not very many years after this that does he win Best Actor for Philadelphia?
Or I think he wins for Philadelphia.
Yeah. Which, by the way, we need to watch for this podcast. Yeah. So, I think this is the Hollywood notices Tom Hanks has some talent. So I've grumbled about this. I've got a real problem with this movie, and I'll just bring it right out. Okay.
Okay.
Do you already know what's coming?
I think I should know because I read your notes. But
so he's 12 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And before he turns into an adult, him and his friend, they talk about like staring down their teacher's shirt and there's like some sexual stuff because he's 12 years old, right? He already has hormones and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he becomes big and then he moves into town and he meets Susan and like all of a sudden he's like – Tom Hanks plays him like a 6-year-old. Like he's in the what do you call it? The limousine, he can't stop flipping the lights on and off. And then when she like wants to spend the night,
the power windows.
Yeah. When she wants to spend the night, he's like, "You mean like a sleepover? Okay, I'm on top." Like completely oblivious, but a 13-year-old Josh Baskin is not oblivious to what's going on. Right, and I think you could write it to where he understands, but it's super awkward because he's young. But instead, like, so Tom Hanks plays a much younger Josh Baskin than Josh Baskin was, I think.
That's true, which is interesting because I read some trivia, and again, I don't know how real this trivia is, but it blew my mind. The kid playing Josh Baskin, according to this trivia, and it can't be true now that I think about it, but maybe it is. Like, they didn't film it, but he rehearsed all the scenes as Josh Baskin. So he's like a kid who's like 13 years old, and he delivers all his lines, and he does like all the blocking and everything. And Tom Hanks observes this kid being a 13-year-old kid, and then he emulated what that kid did.
Yeah. But so the kid's still reading the lines that were written for him. I'm not blaming Tom Hanks' acting.
Like, well, I know. But still, it's kind of weird because they would have noticed that. They would have seen the kid act like a 6-year-old and like, oh, this kid is too old to act like that if they actually did what I was saying. Yeah. And maybe they did. I guess it wouldn't be too difficult to do that. But I have thought that. I have been like, okay, you know what? A 13-year-old kid or, you know, a 12-year-old kid, because he celebrates his birthday during the movie, he should be a little bit more aware, especially when he's having the conversation with Billy, his friend, about, like, sneaking peeks down women's
stuff. Going and buying beer and porn, right? That's Billy's plan for his first paycheck. Let's go buy beer and porn.
Oh, I missed that line. Okay, yeah. No, that's a good point. So there is something – yeah, it is a little bit convenient. Okay, when I saw this movie as a child, I remember thinking, like, if he is that innocent, if he is indeed – like, okay, let's say he is a 12-year-old kid and he is that innocent, then – I would actually think that first experience with Elizabeth Perkins would actually kind of be like sort of traumatizing to kind of be taken advantage of, maybe. I mean, because I don't know. I think you kind of can't have it both ways. Like, he can't be a hornball kid and so dense he never thinks about sex, right? He can't be both things.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting, and I get the idea, right, that how you want to write it that way, because it's like, oh, you know, she thinks he's an adult, but he's this sweet, innocent kid, and he's going to respond this way, and it makes for comedy, but it's just, it's not true to who the character was before he transformed.
So, right. So, so that is a thing. My big problem with Big is, what is Josh Baskin's fascination with bunk beds?
I know. When he gets like this incredible apartment and he puts a bunk bed in there. Right?
Yeah. But he also had a bunk bed at his house.
But he didn't have a brother, right?
And he didn't have a brother. Exactly. Yeah. Like, what was the point of that? It's like, oh, I have to have a bunk bed?
So my guess is he had a brother at some point who, I don't know,
who also turned big,
and like his parents just didn't buy another bed, and so in the new apartment, he just wants to make that apartment feel as much like home as possible. But it's still, I did see that. I'm like, why would you buy a bunk bed? So,
because they're awesome,
yeah. So he has his own bunk bed, and he's on the top bunk, I assume. So.
Yeah.
It's funny. I read this article on The Ringer about this movie. Like, someone went back and was like talking about this as if it was a horror movie. And it was interesting because, like, their argument was that it's only like this light comedy if you look at it through the eyes of Josh Baskin. Like, because otherwise it's like kind of scary. Like, the poor mom, like, her kid has been kidnapped and she's like frantic, you know, and like, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, it is a horror movie for him. I mean, for a few minutes. I mean, they could have extended that out just fine.
The St. James Hotel.
Yeah, like,
right.
St. James Hotel. And I mean, let's be honest. I mean, all of us really, really struggled into adulthood. And it's like the ultimate fantasy of Big is that he's a kid and he succeeds despite being a kid, you know? Like, he had more disadvantages than everybody else in the movie. But also, sorry, going back, that is one thing I really, really like about Big, because they make a point of saying it's like there's not this just binary thing like old and young, and this is the difference between old and young, because Josh is young, yes, but he's also a decent, good person, child at heart. Very similar to the McMillan boss. Like, just because the McMillan boss is an old guy doesn't mean he has to live like by the adult values of Elizabeth Perkins and John Hurd, because those people are crazy ridiculous. They grew up and they decided, it's like, okay, rather than enjoying my life, I'm going to be cutthroat and competitive and tear everybody down around me, and that's what being an adult means. But, you know, Josh, the other adult in the movie takes a shine to Josh because it's like, okay, this person isn't corrupted like these other adults are.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that, how that's kind of a message rather than it's like, okay, there's a difference between old people and young people.
Yeah. So I like that too.
You know, it's funny in that, like, they said, you know, it was a horror movie through the mom's eyes, but like they said, especially it should be a horror movie through the eyes of Billy. because he has to like accept that his best friend is like a shapeshifter who can like turn into a full grown man like anytime.
So speaking of Billy, Billy spends an enormous amount of time in New York City, and I don't know like does if his mom just doesn't care. He's like, I'm going to New York City by myself for the day. Yeah.
I would be freaking out if my 12-year-old went to New York City all by himself.
Yeah, like multiple times per week. So, and then the other
but I mean, he's not telling anybody because he's skipping school all the time in order to do this, right?
Oh, so the other thought I had was Josh made a wish with Zoltar, but I mean, it was there all night long, and I assumed like that millions of people, or not millions, but like many, many lives were ruined that night by the Zoltar machine as people made poor right. choices with their wishes. Yeah. That's a nice now, lull.
I'm sorry about that lull. That
hey, it's okay.
Lull. I'm in charge of this podcast.
You're good. Else? I also think it's funny that when he wants to disguise himself, he puts on a fedora, but I don't understand like who he's trying to disguise himself from. Right, like he, so I don't know. It's interesting. I guess that might be how a kid would think. I don't know.
I guess that makes sense. It might have something to do with his weird video game. Like, is the character in his weird video game, does that person wear a fedora?
Maybe, I don't know.
It seems like there's some kind of hat.
The Wizard Melter?
Wizard Melter video game. Yeah.
Josh ends up with the job that every kid thought was real, right? We all thought that there was a toy tester or a video game tester job out there, and that if we just loved playing video games enough, we could get that job.
Well, but, okay, why isn't there a toy tester?
I don't know. And maybe there is, right? But well, I think I mean, instead of a toy tester, there's focus groups probably.
Well, right? I was thinking there, you got the focus groups. Yeah. And but, I mean, I feel like – well, I think we need to break down like the board meeting where the Paul's crappy building transformer guy because he had data, right?
Yeah,
I assume he had. Well, okay, actually, I think what he said is action figures are on the rise, so therefore this action figure will be on the rise. But like that's just poor surface level commitment to the job, right? Yeah. he probably didn't have focus groups for that specific action figure. He probably had focus groups asking kids, do you like action figures? And they said, yeah. But he didn't say, hey, what if one turned into a building? And then they would spit in his face.
And it was really blocky. So I also, one of the things I noticed in this film is that his love interest, Susan, like she's smoking 20 packs a day.
Yeah.
And I guess it's 1988, right? But it's just, and is that to draw contrast between she's an adult and he's a kid because she's able to engage in this vice? Or maybe just in 1988, I don't remember clearly, and it was still like really, really mainstream to smoke in movies. But
yeah, it's funny seeing. When were we not allowed to smoke anymore? I feel like it was in our lifetime, you know?
When it became like weird to like see. Looked down upon,
yeah,
it changed from cigs to marijuana.
So I don't know. Perhaps. I guess '90s. Thank you, grunge. So
yeah,
we didn't really mention it, but the famous scene in this movie is the chopstick scene, and I gotta say, I think that really holds up. That's a pretty great scene.
It is great because it's definitely. And I don't know if this is true or not, but I think they wanted to hire feet doubles and just cut to them playing. But it was definitely Josh and McMillan themselves.
Yeah, full like, body shots.
Just full body shots, doing the chopsticks and doing it well. And, you know, maybe they dubbed in chopsticks later, but they didn't, right? Because it was totally in sync. And that's – I assume that piano actually works.
So I was told that it's no longer at FAO Schwartz. I was there in November 2019, and it's still there. And there's like a line of kids, and you got to wait your turn. In 2019, it was still there, and my kids hopped on, and I mean, they didn't play chopsticks; they just made noises, right? but I mean, it was still a thing.
They didn't have anything prepared. You didn't send them like you didn't say, "Bring your sheet music."
What's fascinating about FAO Schwartz, though, is it's got like really cool Lego displays, but that's the toy store for really rich parents who buy their kids something that their kids won't ever really be interested in, right?
Yeah.
Like these kind of bizarre toys. But another interesting part of this film is Paul is he like the worst human man in New York City aside from the St. James Hotel concierge? Right? Because he invites Josh to go play squash with him just so he can beat him up. It's like that a hate date.
Yeah. And I mean, talk about like a very childish thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I'm going to get my coworker here so I can punch him.
Yeah.
When I change the rules with squash. Yeah. That's funny.
And I noticed that Paul late into the movie still had like a big sketch of the robot skyscraper in his office. He wasn't going to be defeated on that one.
But again, like the Paul character, that's something I really remember about this movie because Paul asks Elizabeth Perkins, like, you know, why is he better than me? And she says, because he's a grown up, which is a joke because he's a 13-year-old kid. But I think it's funny because it's so true, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this guy is a rotten, immature person. And, you know, he's like the thing he picked up from being a kid, apparently, is just being spiteful to everyone around him. And, you know, and, you know, Josh just isn't like that. So I like that.
Yeah.
Did you notice who co-wrote this movie?
Uh-oh.
Ann Spielberg, sister to Steven.
Oh, it wasn't Anita Spielberg. Wow, that's fascinating. Well, maybe we should blame her for having Tom Hanks play Josh at half his age. I don't know.
Can we just say, though, that Big is really just a delightful movie.
It is. It's a delightful movie. And I think, though, what could have improved it or made it more horrifying is if we'd seen transformation scenes. An American Werewolf in London style. Yep.
Or like when the Uruk-hai warriors are being born out of the mud.
Oh, man. No, this is. I'm happy we watched it again, and it is. It's a delightful movie, and it was fun to watch.
So, a couple assumptions. I assume Josh Baskin is going to grow up to look exactly like Tom Hanks, right?
Yes,
I would assume.
Is that another horror element of this movie? Where like the Josh's mom knows nothing about Josh's kidnapper except exactly what he looks like. And then he miraculously gets her boy back, and he slowly grows to become the man who abducted her son 20 years earlier.
So, like, 15 years, because it'll come on really slow, but at one point she's going to look at him, and it's just going to dawn on her, right?
Yeah. She's like, oh, wow, my son is slowly becoming possessed by that monster.
Oh, speaking of possessions, we're going to talk.
Whoa. Surprising. Okay,
about
so anyway,
how
that's
Gary
big.
Busey possesses my dreams.
Does anybody have anything else to say about Big?
I think I'm good.
It's pretty good. Lots of awards for Big, so we'll get there. Okay, the next movie is Josh's pick, Point Break, which you fortunately picked. I think, you know, thinking about it, I almost picked Point Break, and I'm so glad that you did, because if there's a movie to talk, like, okay, female-directed movie, it's got to be Point Break for, you know, reasons that we implied earlier. But Josh, do you have a history for this? Because why did you definitely have to pick Point Break?
Well, there were a couple of different reasons, but I mean, the most important one is that I love this movie. Like it was like an iconic one from my teenage years. So that was important, you know, and I like Kathryn Bigelow a lot.
Yeah.
And so it was good to have her represented, you know. I thought actually about The Hurt Locker, but I thought Point Break would be funner to talk about.
Okay. Cool. I agree with all of that. I was
listening. And it has Rat in the soundtrack, so you've got that.
Rat is in the soundtrack, Josh. Yeah. I'm just so fascinated by the movie Point Break. I love Point Break, of course. It's funny. I think there are a lot of podcasts with Point Break. I listened to like five this week. Maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe they tinge some of my opinion, but I couldn't help it. I think it's kind of funny that I heard so many podcasts of Point Break, but I couldn't find any podcasts about Big. And I think a lot of the reason people want to talk about Point Break, or at least podcast, or at least have like a hot take or whatever, is because of the Catherine Bigelow aspect of it. I heard some people talk about it, and I don't agree with this, that, you know, it's unfortunate that Catherine Bigelow directed this movie because it's such a masculine movie. And so all of the decisions she would make, any feminine nuance that she could bring, you know, as a feminine person, may have been lost in studio notes because the studio like required her to make it like a masculine movie. And I heard that take, and maybe that's true, but I don't think it's true. I think this is the story of Catherine Bigelow in Point Break. I think she was like, you know what? I'm going to prove that a feminine person can make the most masculine movie ever made.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's like, okay, I'm not even gonna take the notes. I'm gonna kind of show how easy it is for a woman to like to be able to like make a movie that's more manly than any other movie ever made. And honestly, I cannot think of a movie with more testosterone than Point Break. Like, I can't think of one. There are no other movies. Yeah.
I'm looking at her movies, and is this her first big, this is her first movie, like full movie?
Was not her first movie. She did two movies before this.
So she did a New Order music video.
She did a New Order music video. I was gonna
say that's awesome. That only 4 years before Point Break, she was directing New Order music videos.
Yeah, yeah. There were three full movies because I'll just say really quick, The Loveless is Willem Dafoe as a biker. So big masculine movie. And I guess that's her thing. It's like she's like an outsider to masculinity in a way, I guess. But I think she's fascinated in it enough that she just always studies it. It's like men are Catherine Bigelow's thesis statement that she's just lived on her whole life, I guess. Near Dark, I cannot believe we haven't watched Near Dark on this podcast yet, because it's a vampire movie with Bill Paxton that came out the same year as The Lost
Paxton.
Boys. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Near Dark is amazing. It's amazing. And then Blue Steel, right before this, is a Jamie Lee Curtis cop movie. She's
I've
pretty
seen
established.
Blue Steel.
Yeah. So
okay, so there's that. So I did notice K-19 The Widowmaker.
Yes, K-19 The Widowmaker is the forbidden one that you were wondering about. What other Catherine Bigelow movie have we watched? And it's K-19 The Widowmaker. We also, of course, talked about Zero Dark 30. So weirdly, we're huge Catherine Bigelow fans on this podcast, almost as much as we're James Cameron fans. I think they might be tied, which is fitting because Catherine Bigelow was married to James Cameron at the time of Point Break. Although James Cameron was having an affair with Linda Hamilton of Terminator 2 at the time, which makes sense because Linda Hamilton looks a lot like Catherine Bigelow, and I don't know.
He just got confused.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird and confusing and strange. And then years and years later, Catherine Bigelow beat James Cameron for Best Picture because her movie The Hurt Locker won over his movie Avatar, which is funny.
Oh,
yeah.
Sweet poetry.
Yeah, it's amazing. So anyway,
her movie was significantly better than his.
Yes. Yes. Oh. It totally
have you ever
was.
Been less excited for a sequel than the Avatar one?
It's
no.
Amazing how unexcited I am for Avatar. And I'm not saying like I can't believe I'm so much less excited. I think I'm probably more excited than anyone I know, which is a bad thing because I'm not excited. But here's the thing, Josh. Okay, I'm glad you took me down. James Cameron has done it like five times where we all laugh at what he's thinking of and what he's working on. Like,
true.
He did, you know, he's like, oh, what? You're going to make a sequel to Alien? Yeah. Good luck, buddy. Yeah. Alien's a classic. And then it blows everybody away. Everybody loves Aliens. And then he's like, oh, what? You're spending $100 million on an action movie. And then True Lies comes out and it's like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And then everyone's like, oh my gosh, Titanic's going to be the biggest failure ever. And then it was the most successful movie of all time. And then it happened again with Avatar. Everyone's like, oh, this is going to suck. And everybody saw it. And so
true.
It doesn't make any sense, point. But And I'm not looking forward to seeing Avatar 2 or whatever. And I don't see how it could possibly be that good. And, you know, the first Avatar wasn't that great, but it was good enough to watch in the theater. I'm like, okay, these visuals are pretty legit, you know. So, anyway.
Well, this one has more water.
Yeah. Point Break is a movie. And it starts off with some slow-mo shots of Keanu Reeves in the rain. He is training to be an FBI agent. And his name is Johnny Utah.
100% Utah.
Yeah, which was originally the movie was supposed to be called Johnny Utah, but then they changed it to Point Break. I've never heard of Utah as a last name, but I mean, it does help me like the movie more, I suppose. His boss is Dr. Cox from Scrubs, who's yelling like Dr. Cox all the time, which is great. Anyway, they assign him to the bank robbery division because pretty much every couple days in LA, a bank is robbed. Like, okay, we got to get to the bottom of this, FBI agents. And so they set him up with Gary Busey as his partner, Angelo Pappas. And everyone – and Angelo Pappas is the – is the laughingstock of the FBI in
LA. It's probably because of his name. Like, yeah. Poor Gary, does he look anything like an Angelo Pappas?
Yeah. It's because of his name, and because when Angelo Pappas goes undercover as a beach bum, he super, super looks like a narc. Like, oh yeah, that's that guy is a cop. So anyway, everybody makes fun of Angelo, and in one hilarious scene where Keanu Reeves says to him, "It feels good to be angry, right? Yeah, yeah, then tell me what your theory is so we can get these guys." And so Pappas' theory is the guys who are robbing banks known as the ex-presidents because they wear masks of past presidents of the United States, they are surfers. And the reason they're robbing banks is because they're adrenaline junkies, but most of all because they just want money to travel around the world looking for the perfect wave and, you know, keeping up their lifestyle. That's something, you know, you don't hear about. Like, all these, like, ski bums and beach bums and surf bums and everything, yeah. I always wondered that. And I think we talked about this when we talked about Katie Surf movies. Like, you know, how do you maintain this kind of habit? I guess with surfing, it's a little easier because you just need the one board. But I mean, it's expensive to just hang out at the beach, right? But now we know the answer. They, because they rob banks. Surfers rob banks is what we learned from this movie.
Well, but like rob to surf. I mean, you're going to keep going on this, but like the premise of this film is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right? Like Johnny Utah, undercover FBI agent, is going to learn to surf to solve bank robberies. So
yeah, it's ridiculous, and it's so ridiculous it just might work, and it works on me.
It just might work.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So anyway, the thing is, Keanu Reeves, he scopes out a chick, and he's like, "Well, I need to learn how to surf," and so he like kind of picks. Okay. A very pretty woman, a pretty woman on the beach, not the most beautiful girl on the beach who surfs, but the girl who looks most like Johnny Utah. So he totally does that. And she's just like, whatever. They find out they have some kind of file on her. Somehow, somewhere, some police report says both of her parents died in a car crash. I don't know why, but it says it. And so he uses that fact to get close to her. They fall in love. She teaches him how to surf. And then she introduces him to her other boyfriend, Bodhi, short for Bodhisattva, who is – oh, my gosh. Patrick Swayze's so good in this, you guys.
Oh my gosh, so great. He's in peak Chippendale form.
Yeah. I think he was on the Chippendale sketch while he was promoting Ghost, so it would have been around the same time he was filming Point Break as when he was on the Chippendale sketch.
So would Chris Farley have done as good a job as Bodhi? I mean, he is sexier.
I think Chris Farley would have messed with Bodhi a little bit more. The thing about Bodhi, the thing that's great, is he has Keanu Reeves, he has Johnny Utah under his spell from minute one, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, Johnny Utah is just enchanted with him, and I don't, you know, he might be in love with him, but also it's like this guy, you know, because even though Johnny Utah, he's an ex football player, ex-college football player, and he went to law school, but he went right into the FBI training. He is so straight-laced and just so uptight that even the thought of a surfer lifestyle and a thought of the Zen lifestyle, the Buddhist lifestyle of Bodhi just entrances Keanu Reeves. They do a terrible raid on some surf Nazis that are obviously the bank robbers because they're so mean, but no, they're just really terrible mean guys. All they do is screw up an undercover operation by one of their other agents who's
kill like three people.
And they kill a bunch of people. Oh gosh, it's just horrifying. So that sequence is just amazing when, you know, they're fighting the surf Nazis and they just blow everything up. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, you know, and they do some weird thing where they check hair at the beach. That's not really important. The hilarious thing is pretty much the first surfers that Keanu Reeves associates with. Yeah, they're the bank robbers. He's the first ones he comes across on the beach. And there is this weird cat and mouse game where even though Keanu Reeves is deep undercover and also the surfers recognize him as the quarterback for Ohio State, yeah. Which – okay, that's the most unbelievable thing about all of these movies, that these surfers just kind of recognize some football player from 5 years ago. I don't know if these surfers are watching like ESPN.
Does that seem like separate cultures to you, surfers and football? I don't know.
Yeah, it does seem like separate cultures. One thing someone mentioned that I heard talking this week is that they said they saw Johnny Utah outdo someone in the Rose Bowl. So maybe the Rose Bowl might, if these surfers watch any football all year, maybe it would be the Rose Bowl and they like recognize him. Also, big problem with the FBI agents. I don't know why they just advertise that Johnny Utah, he's using his real name. He almost won the Heisman. Everybody knows who he is, apparently. And then for every stakeout and every raid, they're like, okay, Johnny Utah, we don't want to blow your cover. So if any surfers look at you, maybe cover your face a little bit. Just kind of hold your arm in front of your face. And we're going to stake out the bank. And like, oh, if the guys you're trying to get undercover with, if they rob the bank, then, you know, maybe just kind of, I don't know, just kind of like disguise your voice or something. I don't know what they're thinking. But anyway, FBI is a bunch of bad guys. Thing is, because of the FBI's terrible tactics, Bodhi realizes that Johnny Utah is not just a quarterback, but he's an FBI agent, and so, he kidnaps his girlfriend Tyler, and that's when things get weird.
But there's like a confusing moment there where it's obvious to me as the viewer that he knows that they know, right? Because I mean, they looked right at him.
Yes.
And he's not doing anything to like hide himself. And then he's like goes and hangs out with him again for another day. And I mean, like,
it's
I don't know.
Pretty much exactly like, and this happened several times in my life where, there's like a girl I liked and, my friends told that girl that I liked her and then she didn't like me. And then I found out about that, but then we don't acknowledge each other in that same way. Like everybody knows, but we don't acknowledge it, you know? But the thing is, they know Johnny's an FBI agent, but they don't necessarily, it's not like Johnny doesn't know. He like kind of knows, but he doesn't know for sure. Like Bodhi doesn't know that Johnny knows that Bodhi is the guy, but Bodhi knows Johnny's the guy. And Johnny knows Bodhi's the guy, but Bodhi doesn't necessarily know that Johnny knows that Bodhi's the guy. And so he can play dumb about it.
I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I think, you know, when they show up and say, hey, let's go skydiving, maybe that's when Johnny should double over and say, oh, my gosh, I have a massive stomach flu.
Yeah. Instead, like in the middle of the skydiving, he's like having the time of his life, isn't he?
Yeah. But it's funny because it's almost like – Because Bodhi, again, it's part of the allure of Bodhi. He's like, I'm going to convert Johnny out of his ways because he's like, I know you're one of us, Johnny. You don't believe in the man. You believe that the system is failing and you believe in all of these things just like I do. And so I'm going to take you out skydiving and really immerse you in my own brand of spirituality. But just in case you don't go for it, I'm going to kidnap Tyler too.
Mm.
So I think that's the deal, but it is really great because, well, Bodhi's just great. Anyway, they go skydiving. They find the bank where the ex-presidents are going to be. That goes wrong, and a bunch of bank robbers die. And then, you know, because Tyler is a hostage, the circumstances point to where Johnny has to jump out of a plane without a parachute and then follow Bodhi down. And
YOLO!
Yeah, which is amazing, and which apparently is plausible to do in real life, but it's one of the most crazy things you can do in a movie. But yeah,
it seems to me if you're holding on to another person and you're not strapped to each other, as soon as you pull the cord, the person who is not attached to it is going to get like ripped right out of the arms of the other person.
Yes, I've wondered that a lot.
So it's fascinating because I listened to a podcast about a guy in the 70s who hijacked an airplane and he jumped out of the airplane with a parachute. This is not D.B. Cooper. This is another guy.
Wow.
And he had like a duffel bag with $200,000 around his neck. And as soon as he pulled the ripcord, goodbye duffel bag. And he's like floating to the ground going, oh my gosh. So the last 20 minutes of this movie, there's so many people die. Like so many people get killed. And it's weird because it's like, well, they're bank robbers, but they don't hurt anyone, and they just want to have fun. And then all the mortaring starts.
Right, right. Well, it's kind of like because Bodhi is pretty great because he's like, it kind of makes sense. He's like, okay, they need money to fund their thrills, but also robbing banks in itself is a thrill. You know, it is like, okay, those are the things they do. Like surfing gives you adrenaline, jumping out of planes gives you adrenaline, and robbing banks gives you adrenaline. And it's, I think, one reason why everything goes haywire is because as peaceful as Bodhi claims to be, and, you know, and against the man and everything, and all the tactics that bad men use, the need for a greater thrill causes more and more sloppiness. Hence the whole, hey, you know what? Now that Johnny's with us and we're going to rob the bank with Johnny because we're blackmailing him. And all the cops are like, oh my gosh, hey, isn't that Johnny Utah, the one ex-president without a mask? It's like, oh, this is no good. That's when they go for the vault, right? Probably because Bodhi's like, this is our last chance to rob a bank. This is the last chance I'll get this thrill. And so that's when everybody dies, when they get greedy.
Just up in the stakes.
Yeah, up in the stink. Yeah, because Bodhi doesn't wash.
Agree for stink.
Yeah. I'm sorry I'm going way too long with this. I love Point Break. But anyway, they wind up in Australia, and Johnny Utah tracks him down. Oh, and Pappas died, you know. There's no way Johnny Utah is still on the FBI after everything that happened in this movie. Like, I don't
it's
know
one
how
of the
they
worst
let him
FBI
do that.
Ops ever.
Yeah, yeah. Everything, like everyone above him must get fired after this, right? Yeah. But some government oversight thinks Clinton or whoever's president this time. I guess it was the first George Bush was president this time. 92. He just let this go by. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, J. Edgar Hoover, whoever's in charge of the FBI. They just let him go to Australia and grow his John Wick hair out. And he's tracked Bodhi down for a year after everybody else in the movie dies. And he's like, I finally got you, Bodhi. And Bodhi's like, oh, let me surf one more time. He's like, okay, Bodhi. and then
cowabunga.
Yeah, it's the cowabunga from Down Under, from Back to the Beach wave that Bodhi's been searching for his whole life. And he's like, let me surf on it. And it's beyond the limits of Bodhi. And it doesn't show Bodhi die necessarily, but it does show a body flailing in a giant wave. So he's probably dead. So he could not handle that wave. He couldn't survive.
I will say Bodhi fans, including Rhett Weller, are determined to believe that he actually paddled all the way to New Zealand.
Yeah, it would be very difficult to paddle to New Zealand.
What am I going to do, paddle all the way to New Zealand? Yes, he does.
How many miles is it between Australia and New Zealand?
At least 12.
It's 1,000 miles away.
Oh, wow.
You could just ride a wave
from Australia to New Zealand.
So yeah, let me ask now, there's two big fights in this movie that that contend for the sexiest fight. And one is when they're fighting in the surf there at the very end. But also, how about when Bodhi and Johnny Utah take on the skinheads and we get to see shirtless Swayze doing karate?
Yes. Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, yeah. He takes on Anthony Kiedis from the Red Hot Chili Peppers in that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really amazing. Man. There are so many. Oh my gosh. The foot chase in this movie is so great. And it's funny because like the camera is shaky and you kind of can't tell what's going on, and it's really close up, kind of like so many movies are today. But unlike all those other movies, I lied when I say you can't tell what's going on. You can see it perfectly. And it's so thrilling to be like in it, even though the camera's shaky. It's not shaky in a way that like is distracting, you know?
Yeah. Right. So Better Chase, Point Break, or Bullet?
I was thinking that exact same thing. And I know Bullet's a really iconic chase, but this one I think I like the Point Break chase better.
It's definitely Point Break, right?
Yeah. 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 Oh, I love it. And also, are you talking about the foot chase or the car sequence?
Well, yeah.
So well, they kind of bleed into each other, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because they chase the one car away, and then, you know, Bodhi is in the Reagan mask, and he's on foot. So it's kind of they're two happening at once, and that diverges into the foot chase. And then that's when the dog gets thrown on Johnny Utah.
Yeah, he throws the dog. Someone throws the dog at him.
I think it's kind of funny because Bodhi, he's got that Zen master of animals, right? He's just like, he's being chased, but he somehow is able to get a hypno spell with that dog long enough. He's like, okay, get angry when this guy comes around the corner because I'm going to throw you. I'm going to throw you good. Yeah.
So we got to talk about the elephant in the room. And I think, though, that everyone views this as a serious asset to this movie. And it's that. So this is a couple years after Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I think everyone thought, okay, well, he plays the role of Ted really well. Mm-hmm. And that's a character he played, but I think he was just playing Keanu Reeves because he is almost playing Ted Logan again in this movie.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's supposed to be. And it's just, his delivery of his lines is so bad. It's really bad. Like Keanu Reeves acting in this film is one of the worst acting jobs that we've seen on this podcast. It's bad.
Yeah.
Vaya con Dios.
It is. I'm forced to agree. I mean, as much as I love this movie, I kind of feel like, and as much as I like Keanu Reeves, and I've come to terms with like, oh, you know what? I do like Keanu Reeves. I think he is a good actor. But this is no Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, and this is no Keanu Reeves in John Wick. This is Keanu Reeves still growing up out of Ted, I think. Yeah.
It's still awesome.
Oh man, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, he just has a couple lines where I just like I had to pause the movie and kind of take a deep breath. It's just it's astonishing.
Yeah.
So anyway, man, I think this is only the second time I'd ever seen this movie, and it's been a while. But this was something else. I'm still sort of processing this film, but I'm assuming you guys have both seen it many many times.
It's one of my favorites. I really Point Break. I've always loved Point Break. And it's like one of those where, you know, it's like, oh, you kind of have this ironic love for Point Break. I'm like, no, it is legit one of my very, very favorite movies. And I think it's because I feel like such a man when I'm watching it, which is just another thing about like, it's like one of those like years later, and this is what, you know, why we're talking about this. Like, can you believe a woman directed Point Break, which is the movie that makes John Madsen feel most like a man of any other movie?
So this is a great surfing movie too. There's a lot of really good surfing in this film.
Yeah, the sequences, the surfing sequences they get, it's like wow. The I really really love the skydiving sequences.
Yeah.
There was one shot. And I don't know if you caught this or not because, you know, maybe you're so lost in the movie, but there was one shot where it was like, it was literally Patrick Swayze jumping out of the plane and the camera follows him down out of the plane, which is like, you know, one of those things where it's like, okay, that's what makes a movie a real movie is when you actually see their face. When it's like, there's no other way to fake that. Like, that is Patrick Swayze jumping out of a plane.
So was it also him surfing? Was he doing his own surfing?
I don't think he was doing his own surfing. I don't think so.
I'm going to find out, right?
Because, you can find that out. I do know Patrick Swayze. From what I understand, Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves didn't surf before the movie, but they picked up lifelong habits after the movie.
Okay. Oh,
really? Yeah.
So Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze both learned to surf for the movie, but when you see them surfing, it's actually them. It's pretty easy, vanilla stuff. So some of the more technically difficult surfing scenes, it's not them. It's stunt doubles.
Nice. Okay.
Did either of you see the remake?
No. I hear the remake
is I haven't either.
Terrible. Someone said – because the remake was the remake was made by a cinematographer, so the action sequences in the remake are, you know, on par with the original. But I heard someone complaining today that one thing that the remake does is it makes Bodhi kind of relatable all throughout. And I think one of the best things about this movie is that Bodhi starts out as the Zen master Buddha guy. And then his principles just get more and more warped as the movie goes on, and he makes more and more compromises, but he's still got the attitude of this Zen master, and so that's kind of what makes him scary. Yeah. Because he, like, earns everybody's trust so well, and then he just turns into this crazy, crazy guy.
So I have this thing with remakes, and there's reasons why you should remake a film, but I don't have a good reason to remake Point Break.
Yeah.
Like, why would you mess with that?
Right. Like, it's because it's one of those movies, like, okay, love it or hate it.
Yeah.
It lit fire to what it was trying to do, you know?
Yeah. And it had the Busey.
Seems like an odd choice. Yeah.
Good Busey. Now, and this is good Busey. Yeah, I think.
It is great Busey.
You know, sometimes there's Busey and it's like, okay, this is Busey, you know, obviously, so it's good Busey, but it just doesn't work well with the rest of the movie. I think Busey fits perfectly into this movie because he perfectly doesn't fit in because everyone at the FBI hates him and he's the biggest square at the beach. And he's like laughing at the comics and because he's doing that, he doesn't see the bank being robbed and stuff like that. It's just
yeah, Busey sometimes just plays a parody of himself, right? But like, this is like great Busey.
Yeah. It fits in perfectly. I think it's right at the perfect Busey moment. I think after this, it's like, oh, okay, there's too much Busey in the world, maybe. If you're not a Busey fan. I could talk about Point Break a lot, and I did. I think I talked about it too much, but I
can never talk too much about Point Break.
Hmm. Well, are we going to talk about a really similar film?
So it's actually quite a few similarities. A few. They're both kind of ocean related. They're both on the West Coast. Of course, this is the West Coast of Africa. If we're talking about Atlantics.
Well, Atlantics, you ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So Atlantics, a film by director Matty Diop, and very like well-received. And it basically is – so I think it's on Dakar. Isn't that like in Senegal? So it's like it takes place on like the west coast there of, like John was saying, of Africa and Senegal. Yeah. There's all these like construction workers, young men that are helping to build this humongous like skyscraper tower, and they haven't been paid for months. And finally one night, like because they're getting desperate for money, they decide that they need to try to go to Spain, like on a raft, like get in the ocean and try and sneak into Spain just for word. And one of the workers is, his name is Suleiman, and he is he's the boyfriend, I guess you could say, of the main character in this, who is Ada.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's on that raft, and I think it's implied that the raft, that they're lost at sea, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and they never actually came out and said definitively that they died, but I assume they did, right?
Mm-hmm. No.
Ada is, this is the guy that she loves, but she's going to be, her parents have an arranged marriage with this rich guy named Omar, and it's set to take place pretty quickly. So it all kind of happens with that in the back. The rest of the movie kind of happens with that in the backdrop. Backdrop this impending marriage to this guy that she doesn't love. And so she's worried about what's happened to Suleiman. She knows that he took off in the ocean for Spain, but hasn't heard anything from him. And so anyway, they get to... This wasn't clear to me. Maybe you know. Was it her actual wedding?
Yes.
It was. It wasn't a pre-wedding party or something like that.
No. Nope. Yeah, he says they're married.
Yeah. He says they're married. She is referred to as his wife, but I don't think any consummation happened.
No, because the bed burned.
It couldn't because the bed burned. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So their marriage bed that night while they're all in this big house having the wedding, it catches on fire and catches part of the house on fire. And they suspect Ada is involved somehow because she had let some people know that she was not thrilled about getting married to Omar. They start talking about people start saying that they saw Suleiman there who they think might have lit the fire. And so there's this detective that comes in and he starts the search for Suleiman, who's kind of the prime suspect. As the movie progresses, it becomes obvious that these guys are lost or have died at sea. And they start to take possession of the bodies of the local girls to kind of, and it seems like their main point in doing that is to get the money that is owed to them from this guy who was their boss, having them work on this big tower. Yeah. And so
yeah, really quick. I just want to ask the two of you, how obvious was that? Could you tell that was going to happen?
The ghosts were going to come and possess the bodies of teenage girls.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not?
I was not counting on that.
Yeah, I really thought this was going to be a straight foreign film, and then that happened. I was like, oh, wow, this just changed.
Okay, I just wanted to check on that, yeah.
In fact, that was one of the more memorable scenes, where all of a sudden all those girls are in that guy's house waiting for him, and their eyes are all creeped out.
Their eyes are, Roy, their eyes are Sugar Hill eyes, perhaps?
Yes, they are.
And so, I guess it's the spirits of these young men are trying to tie up these things so that they can go rest in peace. Because they once that guy finally pays him, the girls force him to dig their graves. So I guess kind of symbolically leaving them at peace.
And I guess the girls crawled into the graves, maybe.
No, because they showed the one girl in her bed with her handful of money the next morning.
That's true. I just wanted to, because it would suck if they're okay, in order for us to be at peace, you have to bury these girls' bodies.
Yeah. And then so, there's this next twist where the spirit of Suleiman possesses the body of the detective who's investigating the arson.
Yep.
And finds Ada and it kind of freaks her out, but then she realizes who it is. And they have a night of coital bliss. It closes, the movie ends right after that with they're kind of reviewing footage of video footage from the wedding. And the detective who sees himself in the video as the one who burned it down, being possessed by it. The spirit of Suleiman, so he closes the case. And that, I think, is Atlantix.
That's Atlantix.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Pretty good.
So what happens to the detective? Because he gives a thumb drive to his chief police, I guess, and case is closed. So then the guy's just going to say, oh, our detective is the one that tried to burn down the house, right? It just feels like that's not going to end very well.
I know. Yeah, it does seem it's not going to end. And I don't... fully know. I mean, it's kind of funny. This is the second time I've seen it. I guess that's the end of Possession, right? Because I'm not totally sure what it is that made this movie a supernatural. I guess that's part of the fun, is like, okay, we didn't know this was a supernatural movie. But like, whenever somebody dies in this town, does someone come back and possess them? Or is it because there's something so wrong that needs to be righted?
That's what I thought. Like, yeah, it was kind of the justice of it all, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, so it kind of plays like, because it's shot like this realistic, just like, okay, here's a movie that, you know, about like some place that's far away that you've never heard of, and, you know, the struggles of these people and, you know, what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And then, but then it's like, okay, no, this is a fable, you know, but yeah, it's a fable told like by a cameraman who does documentary stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but it was like it really did, the twist there caught me unaware. Like, I didn't see that coming, mm-hmm. you know. And so I like that. Like, it's kind of slow. It, you know, it takes its time, but then it kind of made that scene where all those girls are possessed like even more like shocking, you know, because it. So I thought I liked that. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, would you call this? It's not a horror film, a supernatural thriller. I don't know what you'd call this.
I know that's
a fable is a good one.
Yeah, and I think that's one reason why I was drawn to it. I saw this on a list because I saw this movie a couple years ago, and I saw this movie on a list of female directors. I'm like, oh, this would be good to talk about because I wanted to talk about this exact thing, like what you'd categorize this as, and. Let me just say, I'm just a really big fan of movies that you can't categorize, you know?
Yeah.
And I really like the idea, like, because if something supernatural happened to us, if it turns out that we were in the middle of a ghost story, it would play out this way, right? Where we just don't see what's coming. We don't realize, like, oh, this is the story I'm in. No one told me I was in a ghost story 5 minutes ago, but now I'm suddenly in a ghost story kind of thing. And right. So that's, you know, what turns out. I feel the same way back when we watched that movie. What's that movie I liked, Roy, for Halloween?
Lake Mungo?
Yes. Thank you. when we watched Lake Mungo, because, you know, that's a found footage, you know, supernatural horror movie that turns out to be about, like, heavily about stages of grief and how well you know people in your family and the tragedy of letting people go and stuff like that. And it did that really, really well in a non-horrific way, you know? And so I feel the same way about Atlantics. It turns out that these two people who were just kind of flirting, and you think it's a couple of teenagers in love, and they just kind of play with each other and they talk to each other, and it seems like they don't know each other very well, but then they find themselves in this massive gothic Bronte level romance.
Yeah.
With like weird supernatural obsessive love, which is, you know, some of my favorite things, because, you know, they get to speak that way as well, and in big dramatic ways.
John, is it a love that can't be buried at sea?
It can't be buried at sea, this love.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Atlantics, that was a good choice, John. I liked it, man.
No, everybody likes this movie. Everybody likes Atlantics. But it's like one of those things where, you know, this isn't the kind of movie like, and I kind of wonder. I always like switching things up on the podcast a lot. But also, I wonder how many people are going to, you know, investigate our podcast because we didn't talk about, like, what was another movie we could have talked about? Like, we could have talked about A League of Their Own instead of Atlantics. Yeah. And, you know, maybe more people would be, you know, compelled to, like, join along. And it's like, oh, yeah, I don't have to read, you know, African French or whatever the language was. So
I think it's important for us to periodically do something like this, a stretching movie.
So. Yeah. It's every once in a while we do it. And it once again, it's, it doesn't help us define this podcast every once in a while, but I feel like we need to do every type of thing, which yeah. I think we're sort of good at doing that. So
yeah.
Good stuff.
All right.
Cool. All right. Are you guys ready for Super Awards?
You better believe it.
Okay.
Can I take a massive leak first?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to think of something to do with like Point Break, something they'd say in Point Break, but I couldn't come to it.
Yeah, go ahead. John, I'm going to email you already the
that's ready to file. Go. That's good. Okay, before we get to awards, let's just talk about contact information. Our email is yours, mine, theirs, podcast@gmail.com. Send us an email. We will read it.
Yeah.
Find us on Facebook. Do a search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs podcast. That's a fun place to be because that's where all our polls are, and you can make us watch movies, you can make us participate in genres, and you can participate with us as we're watching the movies, or at least as Roy is watching the movies. So you can talk to him about that and read his comments as they happen. Our blog is yoursmindtheirspodcast.blogspot.com. You can go and find every single reference and every single MP3 file that we've done so far. We've done this 85 other times, and there are three movies in each one, at least three movies, so that adds up quick.
Yeah.
And give us a call, 801-896-4542, 801-896-4542. Say whatever you want about any movie. Say whatever you want about us. Say whatever you want about the state of the world. And we'll be glad to lend an ear, and we'll probably play your voicemail on air. Everybody write down July 1st because we are meeting in Salt Lake City and we're going to do a live event. We're going to watch three detective movies and we're going to podcast after that, and you can infiltrate and be a part of that. So that is contact information, everybody.
Thank you. Yay. I can't wait for July 1st. That's one, two, three. That is four podcasts away.
Ah, holy cow, that's crazy. Okay, we're going to figure everything out between now and then.
Yep.
Okay, now let's do awards. Okay.
Heck yeah.
All right. Roy, best title?
Point Break, because the other one's just Big and Atlantic.
Right, Big is weak. Okay, well, Josh, what do you have to say?
Well, I had Atlantics, because I love it when people pluralize singular words.
That's pretty good. That's good reason. I didn't pick Atlantics because there's so much confusion about what the title actually is. Because it says Atlantics in some places and it says Atlantique in French in other places. And also it says Atlantique singular in French and then plural in English. And I just won't stand for that. Just stop being confusing Atlantique or S. All right, so I picked Point Break because it's a surfing term, and it sounds really cool.
Mm. It does.
Yeah. Okay.
It sounds so cool.
Josh, best poster.
Best poster. Let's see here. Oh, I know. It was Big because I appreciate that it's just a real close-up of Tom Hanks' humongous face.
It's Big Hanks, yeah. It's like, you want Big? We'll give you Big. His hair can't even fit in this picture. Yeah. Okay. Roy?
So I chose Point Break. It's like the Star Wars poster of sexy surfing movies.
Yeah, because it has their big heads. But there are only three ex-presidents at the bottom. Should have been four ex-presidents at the bottom. Yeah, I picked Atlantique because it is a lot of blue, a lot of black.
There's a lot of blue and black.
It had the ocean down at the bottom, and then it had them in an embrace up top, and I really appreciate how not a spoiler that was for the rest of the movie.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, Roy, best opening credits.
I'm going with a Point Break. You had some... good music. You had some surf, and then you had like it was pretty good effects for the days. I think anyone could do it on a PowerPoint today, but you had like the words like scrolling across each other and then revealing what they are, but they're also see through, so you can see surfing happening through the lettering.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so it was definitely Point Break.
Yeah.
And it's the credits over the waves is cool, but you know, it starts out with Johnny Utah in wet jeans, like, and then the movie ends with Johnny Utah in wet jeans. So bookends. There is some nice symmetry there as well.
Okay, good. Okay, Point Break that's the answer. There's some great lettering, you know, where a different shot shines through the letters of Point Break. I love when that happens. And the Point Break, it's moving around. Yeah. Okay, Josh, best technology.
The best technology. I went with Zoltar from Big.
Right, I went with Zoltar too. Because it seems that's quite a technology. I guess it can just do whatever.
Yeah, right? It can do whatever.
Doesn't need electricity.
Doesn't need, as long as you don't plug it in, you can wish for whatever you want, and it happens. Pretty big technology. Okay, Roy, technology.
Yeah, so I went with the gasoline flamethrower using the gas pump.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought this up, because that's just amazing. He just lights the gasoline gas pump on fire, and I hope that would really work in real life. I kind of think probably it would just blow everything up, but I'm not sure. Yeah.
So I do worry, though, because I feel like sometimes you just want to have a fun gasoline fight, and then it results in people dying. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Zoolander stole the gasoline fight in Point Break. okay, let's see. I already said mine. It's a Zoltan machine, but honorable mention to Johnny Utah's extendable antenna with a little mirror on the end.
Oh yeah,
you see around corners. Mm. Okay, Roy, best outfit.
John, you do these out of order.
Sorry.
You can just edit all this out. Okay, so the night of Ada's wedding, it's not her full wedding dress, but it's that white smock she wears afterwards while her and her friends are just taking a bunch of selfies on her bed.
Nice.
It's lovely.
That's nice. Okay, Josh?
Well, I feel like the obvious answer is Tom Hanks' underoos.
That's pretty good. That's good.
Deputy dog underwear.
Okay. I'm going to go with also in Atlantics, Ada's, not her wedding dress, but her acid wash jeans and crocheted top.
Oh.
Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. She looks good. She looks good. Okay. Josh, best name.
From Atlantic. Atlantics, I like Ada's friend Fanta.
Fanta, yeah. Her name's Fanta.
That's my honorable mention.
Yeah. Named after the soda, Fanta, yeah. Okay, right.
Is that your pick, John?
It's my honorable mention is Fanta, yeah.
Oh, mine too. So I went with Angelo Pappas.
Okay, that's my other honorable mention. I picked Johnny Utah because it's like, really? His name's Johnny Utah. Okay. One more honorable mention, and that is Lupton Warchild Pittman.
Oh, yes, the Warchild.
Yeah. Okay, Roy, best food?
Meat pancakes.
Oh, meat pancakes, because that's what you turn into if you don't open your chute.
If you don't pull your chute, yeah.
Okay. All right, Josh, food?
24-inch double meatball sub.
Yeah,
that Angelo Pappas is.
He says, Utah, two meatball subs. I want two meatball subs. They're so good that he has to have two of them, and they're so good that they're a distraction for the whole, like the entirety of just. they miss a whole robbery because of these meatball subs. Yeah. So it's amazing.
Meatballs while they're robbing the bank.
Okay, yeah, meatball subs is the right answer. Okay, Roy, best alien?
Zombie Fanta.
That's good. Okay, Josh, did you pick a zombie?
I did, yeah. I just generally those girls of Atlantics.
Okay. Okay, my alien, I picked Josh Fillmore watching Atlantics. You took to it better than I thought, that's for sure. okay, Josh, best FX.
So I genuinely like got freaked out by those zombies' eyes.
Yeah, pretty good effects. Roy?
Well, I think the Melting Wizard game was pretty great.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. The CGI graphics.
Yeah.
CGA graphics. Yeah. Not EGA or VGA, but CGA. The four tone. okay. My FX, I went with Atlantics, and it's kind of just more of a sound design thing. And it's just the constant sound of ocean waves pretty much through the whole movie.
Ooh.
Okay, Roy, best location.
Josh's Manhattan apartment. Like, I don't know what he's making as a vice president of, like, toy testing, but that is a killer apartment he's got.
Yep, that's what I said, too. Josh's apartment.
Yeah, awesome. It's the best apartment I've ever seen. yeah, I don't know what he's making. I'm going to go with the green laser club room in Atlantics with the lasers on people. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, Joshua, best song.
Well, definitely Nobody Rides for Free by Stephen Percy and Rat.
Rat, yeah. I'm sure.
Stephen Percy.
Yeah, the rat's getting in there. Okay, Roy, which Billy Idol song do you like the best?
Oh, it's Rebel Yell.
Okay. I called it.
But I did honorable mention Nobody Rides for Free. So.
Okay, very good.
Rebel Yell in...
It's in Big.
Yeah, they play Rebel Yell, I think, on the radio, but then later on the radio, they play Hot in the City.
Yeah.
Yeah. okay, I picked the Shimmy Shimmy Go Go Bop song sung by Billy and Josh.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Roy, best guest star.
John Lovitz.
Oh, that's a good one. John Lovitz, the Smell My Neck.
Smell My Neck. Oh, I forgot that line. That probably should have made my awards.
Yeah. All right, Josh, do you have a guess?
I went with Anthony Kiedis from Point Break.
I almost picked Anthony Kiedis. It was always funny to see him and see him get beat up. It's great. I went with John C. McGinley, Dr. Cox from Scrubs, who was kind of playing Dr. Cox, I feel like. Okay, Josh, best external recurring character. Which character has been on a previous podcast before?
Yeah. So I went with James Cameron, who executive produced Point Break.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Good call. Interesting. All right, Roy, you find anybody?
Well, the hat trick now, Gary Busey. This is his third film.
Right, Buddy Holly, and this movie, and
the surfing movie that Katie had us watch.
Oh gosh, of course, yes.
Big Wednesday.
Yes, he was in Big Wednesday. Which, speaking of, my external recurring character is John Philbin, who plays Nathaniel in Point Break. One of the guys. I think he's the guy with the goatee in Point Break of Bodie's team, and he was in North Shore. He was Turtle. Oh. Remember Turtle in North Shore? The guy who spoke funny? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's kind of refined his surfer speak in the 4 years since North Shore. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Roy, best internal recurring character.
I try to play this straight if I can. So Tom Boyd did music for Big and Point Break.
I forgot to look it up. I should have. Really? Big and Point Break. Same music guy.
Yep.
That's very nice. Okay, Josh?
So I went with The Beach. It seemed to play prominently in each of those movies.
Including
Big, right?
Including Big. Okay. Well, it's not, doesn't quite work as well, but I think it's very fitting. I went with Giant Ocean Waves That Kill People.
good.
Okay. Josh, best death.
Best death. I went with the death of Josh Baskin's innocence in Big.
That's good.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I thought about that. All right, Roy?
I went with Bodie, but I threw a question mark on there.
Question mark? Bodie? Yeah, Bodie. The end? Question mark? Honorable mention to Suleiman, because his death is quite poetic and it drives a lot of the emotional action and all that. But I'm going to go with Roach, who jumped out of the plane, pulled his chute, but apparently bled to death on the way down in his chute. Yeah. Nice way to go.
Roach, who looks just like Taylor Hawkins from Foo Fighters.
He looks like Taylor Hawkins in Foo, which is, very fitting. Death-wise, rest in peace. Josh, how about you? This is going to be a big one. The villain. Villain is a big one. This is an important one. Who did you pick?
It is. There's a lot of good candidates. Yeah. I don't even not choose Bodhi. Bodhi, all-timer right there.
I'll just quickly say I agree with you. I think Bodhi's amazing. One of my very favorite villains in film. And I just love how you can kind of see why people love him and why people fear him at the same time.
Yeah.
Tyler, she was just like, she was his girlfriend. And then, did she expect to be kidnapped by him? I don't think she did. Yeah.
He's a charismatic cult leader, kind of.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, cult leader vibes. Okay, Roy, who do you have?
Well, I'm going to go with sluts and their exposed belly buttons. We didn't talk about that, but Ada's friends wouldn't get off the topic of all your friends are sluts. You're always hanging out with the sluts.
Yeah, she's hanging out with the sluts. And I'm not sure.
She loves sluts.
And I don't know. I think that was pretty literal. She's like, oh, I'd rather hang out with these prostitutes than, with the good people I'm supposed to, my new family or whoever.
But the reason they could be possessed was because they exposed their belly buttons, and the spirit comes right in through the exposed belly button.
That answers one of my unanswered questions. Just really quickly, I said Bodhi is my answer, but honorable mentions, there are many. My first honorable mention is the bank vault, because the temptation of the bank vault is what got a bunch of people shot. Meatball Subs is a villain. Meatball Subs, they completely distracted the FBI agents. Giant Wave, of course, is a villain. Yeah. It's our El Guapo in some ways. The guy in their last bank robbery, the quote hero cop who convinced the security guys, are you going to make a move with me? You got to make a move with me.
It's that poor security guard.
Yeah, the security guard is like, please no. And and the ex-presidents, they make a really good point, right? It's like, hey. This money's insured, so no one do anything. No one do anything crazy, and don't be a hero cop. A bunch of people died. Okay, and then my last honorable mention is the Nazi carny. Not a Nazi carny, but the carny who was just a size Nazi. It's like, no, you kid who's obviously trying to pick up on this girl. You can't ride this ride. It's like, let him go through, size Nazi.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Josh, best hero.
So I went with Billy in Big.
That's good.
I have him as an honorable mention. Yeah.
Very nice. Okay, that's good. Roy.
He's a great best friend, isn't he?
He's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So my hero is whomever successfully pitched Point Break and got that movie greenlit. It just seems like that would have been a real uphill battle.
Bless that person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently Ridley Scott was supposed to direct Point Break, in 86.
Oh, wow.
I heard somewhere that, it was supposed to be, Matthew Broderick and Charlie Sheen or something.
What?
Yeah.
Matthew
Broderick.
Remember when we had to watch Glory in school? And it's like, oh, really? Ferris Bueller is a colonel in the Union Army? Well, we'll see how well he does. Nope, don't believe it. Nope. Yeah. Okay, my hero is McMillan of McMillan Toys, because he grew up, but he did not lose his childhood innocence, and I appreciate that. Yeah. Okay. Roy, best goof.
Okay, so I guess this is a goof. It's when Keanu Reeves says, I can't do it, John, you do it well, but he says, take your hands off me right now. And his delivery couldn't be intentional. That couldn't be the way they wanted him to say that line. It was It was just so bad. So
okay, no, that's pretty. I think is that the first time that's happened where a goof is just a line delivery. Yeah, it qualifies. It crossed the line. Yeah. Okay, Josh.
That's good. In Big, when Josh Baskin wakes up the next morning and he's in Tom Hanks' body, but somehow his underwear grew along with him.
Yeah, yeah, the Hulk problem.
Yeah.
Okay, honorable mention, the Zoltan card. It says your wish is granted, but each individual letter of the first word is capitalized as if it's the title of a play or something. That's not a sentence. You don't capitalize every letter. So I don't, yeah. Zoltan, you know, I know you're all knowing and all powerful, but, you know, compose sentences correctly, okay? And the other goof is the ex-presidents, the reason they find out that they're surfers is because they have tan lines, like specific like swimsuit tan lines.
Oh, yeah.
But every time it shows the ex-president surfing, they're in wetsuits. So they wouldn't have those tan lines.
Oh.
Atch.
Yeah. Thanks to Katie for that. She pointed it out. Okay. Roy, best LOL moment.
Okay. So I actually couldn't stop laughing during the scene where Paul was beating up Josh while they were playing squash or whatever.
Okay.
So that's my honorable mention, but I went with In Big as well, mm-hmm. where Josh is trying to convince his mother who he is, and he says, I made this for you, and then he smashed like some priceless piece of my child made it for me porcelain.
His little ceramic thing is the ceramic, yeah, the cup. Okay, no, that's good. Okay, Josh.
So my funniest moment was that whole scene when he wakes up, Josh Baskins wakes up as Tom Hanks. I love it, and I love how Hanks plays it. It's awesome.
Okay, nice. Those are both funny moments. They're not right. They're not the correct answer. Honorable mention to Josh lifting Susan up on the trampoline and just drags her across the trampoline.
Oh, yeah.
But the winner is Billy in PE, who says, hey, I'm open, and just bricks the bottom of the rim twice in a row.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Roy, D minor moment. What's the saddest of all moments?
Josh is too small for the ride, and he gets humiliated in front of the girl.
Oh, that's really good. Very sad.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Josh?
So mine is a sad moment that turns happy. And that is when Johnny handcuffs Bodhi, and for a moment we think he will never get to ride his wave.
Oh yeah.
That would have been really sad. He waited, like, it was his whole life for that. But then he just like, yeah, go ahead, ride the wave.
Yeah.
Okay. My moment is at the beginning of Atlantics when Suleiman says, hey, meet me later tonight. She's like, no, I'll just see you later. Or let's, you know, just stay here. And then she's like, oh, I'll see you tonight. I'll see you later. And he's like, no, let's just, you know. And then it, like, in hindsight, you realize that he was leaving to go to Spain without telling her. And so, you know, it was the last time he was ever going to see her. And he wound up dying and he didn't want to die. So that was my sad moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, Josh. What in the world moment going on? WTH, what you got?
Oh, this was my favorite category.
Okay.
So I've got two of them here, and I think they're both incredible, and they're both from Point Break. Okay. So the runner-up is when they're playing beach football, but Johnny Utah goes under center to get the hike, the snap.
Okay.
Like, when do you ever like stick your hands in your center's crotch when you're like playing pickup football?
When it's pickup football, yeah. They talk about this. I listened to the rewatchables today. They talk about that football game a lot and how the it looks like a 400-yard football field because they're running like constantly on it. And in pickup football, you rarely have an offensive and defensive line, but they have like, it's like, okay, you're assigned to block again. There are five of you. It's like, really? This is just beach football.
Play left guard.
Yeah.
With a center who the quarterback puts his hands right under his crotch.
Yeah.
But my winner though, and it's a bit of a two-parter, but this kills me. So they're doing that night surf.
Yeah.
And Johnny sees that surfer who pulls his shorts down, and he like immediately, he's like, that is the ass that I saw in the security camera. And like he just instantly recognized it, like the light bulb went off right then.
He beat the FBI butt computers at it. Yeah.
Yes. But then the equally thing that just, I don't know why I never caught this before, but like when they're looking at the like the bank, the CCTV footage from the bank, you know, when he moons the camera, like they pause it and like you can totally see the Eye of Sauron. Like it's not.
Whoa.
It was astounding.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll have to watch for that. That it's like Point Break took a supernatural turn there.
Yes.
All right,
Roy.
So for me, it's just in Point Break where, like, when Johnny Utah participates in the bank robbery, and from that point forward, like 2/3 of the cast dies, and it was just a little shocking. Yeah.
You were having so much Busey, fun. Yeah.
When the Busey died.
When the Busey died, we didn't even really talk about that. It's like, that's unfair. I mean,
adios, imagine
the conflict of Johnny Utah being torn between two father figures.
Is it weird to you that like when he sees the gang robbing the bank that he just spent all this bro time with, and he just immediately starts firing, like he empties that gun multiple times trying to kill his surfing pals anyway.
Yeah. That's rough. Okay, my moment is, it's just the zombie eyes in Atlantics. It's like, oh my gosh, you see like the women walk across the city at night for the first time, and it's like, what's with their eyes? What's going on? And then they address the guy, and you just don't know where you are. It's like, where am I? Yeah. Okay, Roy, best scene.
Okay, a couple honorable mentions. Johnny and Bodhi fighting the skinheads together.
Yes.
That's pretty sweet.
Yes.
The chopstick scene. Okay. But my winner is the Point Break car / foot chase.
That's my winner. Yeah.
That's my winner too.
Oh, wow. Okay. It is so good. Yeah. I am going to go. Oh, sorry. I already said that. Josh, best actor.
I went with Tom Hanks. He's amazing in that. Even if he's playing it a little younger than maybe he should. But, like, I mean, gosh, he got nominated for Best Actor for it, and he was convincing and hilarious, and I can't imagine anyone else playing that role, honestly. Like, he owned it so well.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Roy?
I'm going to go with Jared Rushton, who plays Billy.
Billy.
Tom Hanks' best friend, yeah.
I am surprised, because I happen to know that the person you thought it was, which is the kid from Terminator 2, is an actor you dislike actively.
And he's the kid from Different Strokes.
Because he's the kid from Different Strokes, yeah.
Sam?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's not.
The guy in Terminator 2 is.
The guy in Terminator 2 is, but not the guy in Big. Because I thought that too. I thought it was Sam from Different Strokes. But yeah, obviously we're wrong. So.
Hey, Mr. D.
The kid who single-handedly ruined Difference.
Okay, I'm going to go with Julie Michaels, and she plays someone named Freight Train.
Ooh.
And she is the woman who, when they do the raid, she is the nude woman who just beats the crap out of Keanu Reeves.
Oh.
She just totally takes him out. And so I almost put that in the WTH moment, but it's one of my favorite moments of the movie because she takes out Keanu Reeves and another FBI agent. So you don't want to mess with her. Yeah. Okay. Questions. Josh, do you have any questions that have been left unanswered?
Well, yeah, I did. I had one big universal question, and that is, do we think that Bodhi lived?
No.
No,
I don't think he lived, because not because I don't think he could handle it, but because he was, if we want to look at it in a spiritual way, he was no longer at one with the universe by the end of the movie. And I don't think the universe was going to support him on that wave.
That could be.
Yeah, that's my thought anyway. Of course, we never found the body, so, you know. Okay, Roy, any questions?
Yeah, so I'm sorry. My first question is why Josh, when he transmorphed back into young Josh, why he didn't have to wait until night? Why it didn't happen while he slept?
Right.
It just, you know.
Well, when it changes back, it has to be during the day.
Okay.
Yeah, one happens at night and one happens during the day.
Okay, and then my other question is, why Sexy Swayze? Why?
Why'd he go for the vault? Or why did he just lose his way?
Yeah, I think maybe that. Why? Yeah, just why?
Okay. I have
no one will ever.
Yeah. I have like five other questions. But they've all been answered. Like, how did they come back alive in Lantix? And why New York City? Oh, actually, no, we didn't really answer that. Okay, so.
Well, why wouldn't he just like.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they have him hang out at Billy's house in his basement or a nearby Motel 6 or something?
See,
I don't understand.
I think you'd go to the nearby Motel 6. Is it possible that the St. James Place is the cheapest place to stay they could find in
the
New York
area
and New Jersey? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, but they did know they had to keep him close to the Bureau of Video Game Machines. Maybe.
Is that why they had to go to New York City? It's only there where they can get that.
Yeah. Yeah. The Melt Wizard game, apparently it's not really a game, so I guess I don't have any questions about
that's
that.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. The Thermal Pod, it's like a wizard, but you have a thermal pod against a wizard. Yeah. It's kind of a genre-crossing thing, so I don't know about this video game. Okay, but my biggest question is, say you have some lighter fluid. What are the advantages to taking a knife and stabbing the lighter fluid, getting lighter fluid all over your hand, and then dumping that in the fire?
Yeah, that guy should have lit himself on fire.
Yeah.
Like okay. The lit form.
Yeah, there's no advantage. That was really dangerous.
No advantage. That's fine. Okay. Josh, do you have a best quote from the movie?
I do. Okay. Yeah. Comes from none other than Detective Angelo Pappas. Talking to Johnny Utah, I was taking shrapnel and caisson while you were crapping on your hands and rubbing it on your face.
that's definitely a good Busey line, and yeah, and a good Josh line too. Okay, Roy.
Sure, it's a short dialogue between Dr. Cox and Johnny Utah, and so his character's name is Harp. So Harp says, do you think that taxpayers would like it, Utah, if they knew they were paying a federal agent to surf and pick up girls? Johnny replies, babes. Harp, I beg your pardon. The correct term is babe, sir.
That's surfing 101. Yeah. Okay. All right. My quote, it's from Atlantix, and it's something that sounds like it's something out of Wuthering Heights, which is kind of why I like it. And it's Solomon during their kind of when they get together at the end in the love scene. He says, "All I saw was your eyes and your tears. I felt your weeping dragging me to the shore. Your eyes never left me. They were there within me, pouring their light into the depths." Now, that doesn't mean anything, right? It doesn't make any sense, but it sounds like something, you know, a kid in love might say if he could think of it, you know? So,
yeah.
And again, kind of Bronte-ish.
Yeah. Sounds okay. Better than rubbing crap on your face.
Yeah. Okay, Josh, let's start with your taglines. What's the best tagline of these and what are your replacement taglines?
Okay, so my favorite real tagline is from Atlantix, "Every love story is a ghost story." I don't know what that means, but it sounds kind of cool.
Yeah,
cool. No, it's true.
Yeah.
So my fake taglines, Point Break, "If you only surf to be radical, you suck really bad." From Big Heart, "Big Laughs, Big Wiener."
Yeah.
And from Atlantix, let me see if I can do this. Let me see if I can do this.
getting the French out. Is that,
there we go.
Are they? Is he saying Suleiman? What's he saying?
Yeah, the old Neil Diamond classic.
Oh,
Suleiman.
Really? I've never heard of that. That's amazing. Okay, that. Okay, I don't feel so bad about mine then, because you set a precedent that I will follow. Okay, Roy, tags and fake tags.
So probably 100% pure adrenaline from Point Break.
Yeah, that's good.
My alternative's big. Things are about to get a lot bigger. Point Break. Join the FBI today. And Atlantique. Turn around, white eyes.
So many. Wow, song quotes. Very nice. Okay. So my favorite tagline is from Big, and it's, have you ever had a really big secret? I guess, you know, the secret is that he's big. I guess, I don't know. Okay, now, just to set this up, do you guys know the Pixies song called Gigantic? Because in the song, it's sung by Kim Deal, so it's a little bit different. So it's the girl singing. But in the song, she, like, witnesses, like, two people getting together for love, like, in her backyard or something. And their secret, and so then they start, you know, making their little love, and then she sings the chorus, which is my tagline for Big, which is gigantic, 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 a big, big love. Yeah, it's that song. So, it's the Pixie song. It's pretty good. It's my favorite Pixie song.
Okay.
Okay. So my Point Break tagline is, it's young, dumb, and full of cum versus the trippy, sky flippy hippie while playing Loosey Goosey with Gary Busey.
Ooh. Nice.
Ah, yeah. Good.
Okay. Now, my Atlantic's tagline is, Atlantic, 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 a big, big love. So, yeah. Kind of based on the gigantic one, if you call that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's that. Okay. One more regular award. Roy, best titular line.
Oh, yeah. So it's got to be Latigo Beach. Nice Point Break. Long workable rides.
Good. Yeah. That's good.
That was mine, too.
Okay. Yeah. I just did I Wish I Was Big.
Yeah.
Just did that one. I thought about just doing a random other big line, but that would have been difficult. You guys had a better one. Okay. now. Of these three movies, Roy, which one is the girliest?
It's Big. I think we get a lot into learning about ourselves and dealing with the growing up and kind of the traumas associated therein, because girls are allowed to be vulnerable and get in touch with their feelings, but not so much the guys. So it's girly.
Okay. That's good reasoning. Okay, Josh?
So I went with Point Break, you know, and maybe just kind of like in like a Magic Mike context, you know, where there's lots of dudes with their shirts off.
Oh, okay, right. So it's girly eye candy.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I went with Atlantic because it was the movie that had women in it. The other two kind of didn't. But yeah. Okay, so now we're going to do Director's Battle Royale. Before you give your picks, I just want to just do a little like primer update on what these other directors have done. So now, Roy, we can do Battle Royale, whatever rules we want. But Roy, I found your rules fascinating, where it's like, okay, everybody this person has directed can get in the ring. And so, you know, the physical power of all these other people in all the other movies can come to that director's aid. So it's Penny Marshall, you know, Laverne or Shirley, one of those two, versus Catherine Bigelow, the ex-wife of James Cameron and, you know, a famous director. She did Zero Dark Thirty and stuff. And Mahdie Diop, a French woman who directed Atlantics. Really quickly, I'll just say Atlantics is the only real movie Mahdie Diop did. She did one 45-minute documentary and then a bunch of shorts. So she really doesn't have anyone on her side feature-length-wise.
She's got a zombie squad.
Yeah. Yeah, she has her zombie squad in Atlantic, so that's pretty good.
But the zombies were threatening, I guess, but they didn't – I mean, did they set – I guess they set some fires, right?
Yeah. If you're a zombie, you can set random fires, but not like a flamethrower gun or anything. It's just like, okay, I can decide this bed is on fire or this hallway is on fire or something.
Yeah. So if this is kind of just an open discussion, I mean, so Catherine Bigelow.
Well, hang on. I just wanted to go over everybody else's.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. So just moving on to Catherine Bigelow. Her first movie was The Loveless, which has William Dafoe in a biker gang. So you have a biker gang there. Her next movie is Near Dark, where Bill Paxton is in a squad of vampires terrorizing southwestern towns. There's the New Order video for Touched by the Hand of God, so New Order. and then there's Blue Steel, where Jamie Lee Curtis plays a tough-as-nails female cop. Then Point Break, of course, you have the ex-presidents and the FBI. Strange Days, which is a futuristic movie about like virtual reality and stuff, and Ralph Fiennes is in it. And then K-19, The Widowmaker, which we have discussed on this podcast before, and that is a nuclear Russian sub. The Hurt Locker, you have army guys dismantling bombs. Zero Dark Thirty, you have Navy SEALs and Osama bin Laden.
And Jessica Chastain, who is really scary in this film.
She's ginger power of Jessica Chastain. And then the movie Detroit, which I think is about a bunch of people in Detroit during riots. I think I've never seen it. Okay. Penny Marshall. On her side, you have Whoopi Goldberg from Jumpin' Jack Flash, Tom Hanks and Big. You have all the old people who forgot their lives in Awakenings. They probably won't be too much help. the baseball team in A League of Their Own. Danny DeVito in Renaissance Man. Whitney Houston, right? In The Preacher's Wife. And then Drew Barrymore in Riding in Cars with Boys and Dennis Rodman in the documentary Rodman.
So you can never count out Rodman.
Right.
He's a real wild card.
Wild card, yeah.
But I mean, I think I got to go with Catherine Bigelow. I mean, she's got some really serious firepower in her back pocket.
It's volume. The answer is simple. Yeah. Volume. And
well, it's volume and it's Bill Paxton.
And Bill Paxton.
Well, yeah.
Vampire Paxton.
Vampire Paxton. Bigelow has some really, like, literally, like, a lot of big weapons. It's like Bigelow. It's in her name, right? Is that how she got the name Bigelow? She's she should have directed Big, right? but I mean, she's big, right? It's go big or go home, right? I mean, vampires, nuclear subs, you know, surfer, bank robbers. She's got an arm. You don't want to mess with Bigelow's squad. So, yeah, I agree. Oh, okay. Well, we didn't really get into very much of the like feminine aspects of a female director, but all we pretty much concluded was that Catherine Bigelow has a bunch of tough people in her movies, which I'm fine with.
Did these films pass the Bechdel test?
Oh, that's a good question. I meant to ask
that. Point Break did not, because there's only one female actor that never really talked to another female actor in the film.
Yeah, it would have been nice if Tyler met up with the FBI woman who like scopes out Tyler and says, "Nice job, Utah." getting that girl. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of Big. I can't think of a conversation held by two women in that movie.
I'm pretty sure no two women associated in Big. In Atlantics, there were a lot of women who associated with each other, but they were mostly discussing Suleiman. Or is Suleiman alive? Yeah.
Or the wedding. Ada's wedding, yeah.
Yeah, so, I think what we've concluded is that no woman director has ever passed the Bechdel test.
Never, yeah. Well, it's sampling strategy. We've sampled three films, but we feel like it's pretty solid data.
We kind of picked the three movies that we wanted to watch, which are very male-centric, which I suppose is not a very good way to do it. But, here we are. Okay. Anyway, those are awards. Okay. So is it on to future business?
We got to rank the movies, but if you want to hear some stats.
I forgot about ranking the movies. Okay, stats away.
so big. It cost $18 million. It made $152 million.
Huge hit.
Yeah, that's our leader on Rotten Tomatoes with 97%.
Wow.
Point Break cost 24, made 83. So it's still, I mean, more than tripled its budget. So that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. 69%. Atlantics, I have no idea how much it cost. It made $400,000.
Oh, almost to the big million-dollar mark.
Yeah, 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's right up there as well. And Ooh. It won an award at the Cannes Film Festival. So
yeah, it was like the Grand Prix Award winner or something. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's do rankings. Josh, your third favorite.
God, these ones are kind of hard to rank. Like I,
so different.
I mean, I like
all three, they are but different.
I probably say Atlantic's number three. Just I think about what's rewatchable for me, and I think I would watch those other two more than Atlantic's.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Then I picked right for you as an alien. Roy, agreement.
Yeah, I also picked Atlantic's for number three. It was a fascinating movie, and it, especially like kind of the twist, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's my number three.
I'm gonna go. I don't know. Maybe just because I'm me, but I think you guys. I'm gonna go big. Gonna go big, and go home, apparently. I love the movie. It's right there. And then my number two. I'm going to go Atlantic's. It's kind of, I don't know. I kind of consider it a John movie. It's like personal to me, so I love it. Okay, so Roy, what do you think, number two?
My number two is Big.
Nice. Josh?
This is hard, but I think my number two is Point Break.
It is? Oh, Josh. Wow. Yeah. Okay, so that means Big is your definite favorite movie.
Yeah, I love it.
I thought for sure, I just said that Atlantic's is a very John movie, and I think Point Break is almost the most John movie ever, somehow, even though I don't really consider myself a surfer or extreme or whatever, but I...
Or a raging testosterone maniac.
I'm not a testosterone maniac, but I feel like I could be when I watch Point Break.
I watch movies like Point Break, and I'm like, is it too late?
Right? Yeah.
Get into shape.
I can start living now in an extreme fear-induced way. Yeah. Good picks. Three good ones this time. I really appreciate you guys for the picks. I appreciate the listeners for picking them. Good times.
I appreciate Josh for coming on again. Two podcasts in a row. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. It was awesome. Always good. Always good to have you, Josh. I loved your perspective this time.
Looking forward to sitting down with you at the live event. That'll be good times.
That'll be super great. Okay, so yeah, I'll see you shortly, Josh. Okay, but we're not done yet. We got to take care of the future. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think if we do it right, and if this isn't too awkward right now, we're going to call Mark up right now to find out, because Mark is coming on to bring his new movies, whatever new movies he hasn't seen, and he's figured out a pretty weird way to pick his new movies. So Skyping Mark right now.
Yo.
As you know, Mark, when you come back, you got to come back with three movies you've never seen. And you left part of this decision up to Filthy Democracy.
Yes.
And I am so excited.
Mark, are you going to – I mean, you still have control. Are you going to follow the people?
I want to honor the democratic process. But I am understanding Russians more and more now based on this poll.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure I would have chosen those movies. But whatever. Democracy wins. I got to say,
Mark, I've been wanting to watch Savannah Smiles on this podcast since we started this podcast.
No way. I had no idea what this movie was, that this movie even existed. I was in a messenger conversation with Andy and Flinders, JB Flinders, and they were asking me, hey, man, what movies are you going to choose? And I told them, look, I'm having such a hard time with this because I've seen pretty much every movie ever made. And I told them, you know what, throw me something obscure. So they were throwing me all these movies, and I'm like, no, dude, I've seen that one. I've seen this. And Andy then said, I'm going to throw you some Provo movies. I'm like, what the heck does that even mean? Like, what do you mean? He's like, no, you're going to thank me for this. And then he started throwing me some titles, and I'm like, well, I haven't heard of that. And they kept insisting on this Savannah Smiles.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, what is this about? I'm assuming it's about dentistry in Utah.
So Savannah Smiles is the Provo, Utah version of North by Northwest.
Ah, it's already horrible. Okay.
Prepare to have your heart warmed, Mark.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, well, I did a Google search on Savannah Smiles, and the first still is a little girl crying and this car blown up behind her. And I'm like, I have no idea what is happening here. Like, I thought it was like about a dental hygienist or something like that. She finds love in the hills of Provo. Do you guys even have hills in Provo? I don't know. Yes. I'm not too sure about Utah terrain because I'm not from there.
It's rough terrain. Mark, I will say really quick, just so you know more about Savannah Smiles than I do. It just totally missed me. I don't know. I guess I was hanging out with some cooler kids or something. But
you've never seen it, John?
No, I never have. But Roy, Josh, Flinders, Andy, Brooke, they were all like dorking out to Savannah Smiles. It sounds dumb to me. I missed it. So I can't wait to see it now.
Oh, yeah, John, it's not dumb. If you think a lovable outlaw named Alvy sounds dumb, then I guess.
I was assured by Eamon Allred that this is the proviest movie that's ever provoed. I still don't know what that means.
So I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. But it's definitely a Utah film, and the climax does take place at Bridalville Falls, right up Provo Canyon. But anyway.
So fine. That's one of them. So I guess whatever.
All right.
I'm already in a bad mood. And speaking of mood, the second movie that it got the most votes was In the Mood for Love. That came out in the year 2000.
So you're doing it that way? I assumed that you were just picking Savannah Smiles and then you're doing the other two yourself. But that's not the case, you're saying.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Like I said, I'm democracy wins for today.
Okay, for today,
you're a brave man.
For today,
for now.
I saw In the Mood for Love for the first time just last year.
Really?
So that's a fascinating film. Yep.
I never even heard about this movie. I'm assuming it's a family movie about two people who fall in love, and it's so wholesome.
Isn't that another Paparita?
Don't answer his questions. Don't answer his questions. So, let it be new.
There is a torrid love affair with Pat Morita.
Mm. Yes. Okay, I don't want to know any more about this.
John, have you never seen it?
I've never seen In the Mood for Love. Okay. I guess I don't like movies.
Is it Chinese or Japanese?
Isn't it Japanese?
It's Chinese, isn't it?
Oh, well, I'm so glad we know.
I'm pretty sure it's Chinese.
I thought it was Chinese.
Yeah.
Well, there's no way to know. We'll never know.
There is a way to know. Okay, it's Chinese. I'm looking at the names of the actors. It's Chinese.
Oh. It's Chinese, and this could very well be the movie that breaks democracy.
Okay,
but we'll see. We'll see. They've had 20 years, 23 years, but let's see. And then the last movie. This is my choice, and it's not even really my choice. I was kind of dared to watch it because I've been avoiding it because it just sounds all sorts of dumb. It's Moonfall.
Moonfall.
Yeah, we're gonna watch that, guys.
Is it
my 10-year-old loved it?
No way.
Yes.
Well,
where's it currently available?
Sounds like it came from a 10-year-old. I don't know where it's available. I'm assuming it's gonna be on one of the streaming platforms. If not,
it's
I guess
gotta
I have
be
to
like
rent
on
it.
Demand right now. Yeah. I think.
Yeah. I probably have to rent it. There goes $3.
This just barely came out.
Not long ago.
The Roland Emmerich movie. Wow. He made the Roland Emmerich of the Matthew Broderick Godzilla fame.
That one.
Wow.
Savannah Smiles, In the Mood for Love, and Moonfall. That is a really eclectic trio there.
Massively eclectic.
I guess, yeah, democracy works as far as diversity goes, in a way.
In the worst possible way. So about Moonfall, y'all. It turns out that the moon is hollow.
That's true.
That takes me back.
I thought we all knew that. That's how they tried to sell it to me, and I'm like, y'all really want me to watch this? And you're coming at me with this? It's hollow? Come on. But anyway, I was there to watch it.
That's where the cheese is, I guess.
I'm going to make y'all suffer with me.
All right. Well, Savannah Smiles, In the Mood for Love and Moonfall. And I think those are all in chronological order already.
Yep.
So lovely.
Okay. All right. Mark, thank you for your help in deciding what to watch. Thank you for your charity to the world by allowing the masses to dictate your viewing. I think it's noble and brave of you. So this will be a great experiment. This will be good. Yeah, and those are all new to me somehow, so it's like doubly new. Sweet. Yeah.
That's sweet.
Well, so the only one I haven't seen is Moonfall. So but the other two are brilliant. I mean well, In the Mood for Love's okay, but Savannah Smiles.
Oh, I'm thinking of that smile right now.
Are you, Josh?
I feel like you guys are overselling this. I don't know, man. I'm getting a weird feeling about this. Hey, I'm getting a top dog feel about this.
When this movie ends, if you don't go home and appreciate your kids a little more, then there's something wrong. So,
well, after my kids' concert that I went to tonight, I kind of need something like that. Guys, it was horrible.
Oh, bummer.
Horrible.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming on, and we look forward to seeing those three movies. And we'll have you back in 2 weeks.
Yep.
All right, man. Sounds
cool. See you in 2 weeks, Mark. Thank you.
See you, Mark. Later.
Okay. Well, that was fun. Mark is always great. He's always such a good sport, isn't he?
Yeah. It's a good set of movies. I'm especially Savannah Smiles. I can't wait. Moonfall looks so bad, if I'm being honest. That looks really bad.
Does it? I never heard of it. It's so weird. Yeah. Okay.
It was, I don't know.
Well, your 10-year-old son loves it, so
he did.
How bad can it be?
Do we have anything else we need to take care of, Roy? I always mess this part up. Okay.
Yeah, no. So Mark will have to come back 2 weeks later for his community service, and we ended up with a tie between movies that take place in one day and Charles Bronson cleaning house movies. However, Mark, who it's his community service, so we defer to his vote. He chose Charles Bronson movies.
Wow.
And I'm so excited. I don't think I've seen a single movie where Charles Bronson was the leading actor. And I thought about this, and I thought when we ask for movies and when we create a poll, we're probably going to get maybe the Dirty Dozen or the Magnificent Seven or the Great Escape. And I don't really see those as like Charles Bronson movies. I see those as movies that he's in. Mm-hmm. But there's about 30 Death Wish movies.
Right. I mean, we could watch Death Wish 7, 8, and 9. Yeah. Right? Like we could skip the first Death Wish and watch the other Death Wishes.
He's got another Death Wish movie, not called Death Wish, but called Murphy's Law, where he's the law. but there's a movie where he plays a bare-knuckle boxer in the Great Depression.
Wow.
So I already know what I'm going to pick. I'm really, really excited. It's a movie I've never seen before, but I've been dying to watch. And actually, I was surprised to learn that he was the lead in this film. But I'm eager to see what we come up with in our poll.
Nice. Okay. So that's the official winner, but we don't have to pick any further movies, correct?
Yeah. I just would, just to kind of make people feel good or bad or whatever, if we had done the 24-hour movie, I'm pretty sure I would have done Dog Day Afternoon, which I've never seen. But Duel would have been a good choice as well.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So
Lola Run.
Yeah, 24 hours didn't work. I was probably going to pick Falling Down, maybe. Mm. But, you know, that could still be an option for later, so we'll do that. Okay, well, that's the end of the podcast.
Yeah, there's no new categories for us to talk about because we will have Richard Templeman joining us with his three movies that mean a lot to him.
Okay, yeah, and we've never talked to him out loud. He's been a Star Trek fan of ours, like on our Star Trek podcast for several years.
A long time, and we berated him into doing this because we couldn't fill up the calendar, and now like the calendar's too full.
Yeah.
But he's on, and we'll have a really good time. And I'm excited for his community service because I'm going to nominated category that I think is just perfect for him. I hope it wins, so we'll see.
That'll be good. Okay, and anyway, everybody write down July 1st. We're doing detective movies, and we know the movies, but you're going to have to just stay tuned because we it's going to be the next podcast after this one where we reveal those movies.
So you'll release it quickly, though. You're not going to wait 2 weeks.
I'm not going to wait 2 weeks. No, no. I'm going to stay up late for the next 4 nights trying to get this done. So yeah. So that'll be great. So if you're hearing this right now, then it's already done and over with, and I'm more decrepit than I was, which is fine. But everybody, just write down July 1st and just stay here and just keep listening. So that's fine. Okay.
All right.
Thanks again, Josh. I'll be seeing you shortly, but call in for anything. And thanks for doing your community service.
Oh man, it's so much fun. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Josh. Can't wait to bring you back next year for some other crazy gimmick and see you at the live event.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
All right. And to everybody else, also goodbye. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
See ya.
That's ready to file. Go. Okay.
I'm so tired. I'm starting to do there's probably like an hour of work I do when we hit the stop record button, and I've started to do it.
Oh, what's the hour of work?
Oh, I like create the, I download the posters and I create the banner and then I start updating the spreadsheet and then I update the, my letterboxed stuff.
Oh, wow.